Okay, well, apologies for the delay. Just get started now. Good morning, good afternoon in Ukraine and other places further east. Welcome to the Week Ahead in Russia, RFE Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest is Chris Miller, a BuzzFeed News correspondent who is not in Russia, but in Ukraine, the neighboring country that's been under attack since Russian President Vladimir Putin launched a massive and unprovoked new invasion on February 24th. Now, Chris is a former colleague who's done great reporting for RFERL from Ukraine in the past, including from the war and the war zone in the Donbass, and is doing great reporting from Ukraine now at this unbelievably terrible time. Thanks very much for joining me, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Sorry for the delay. The delay is my fault. But I think I've got everything worked out. And greetings from Western Lviv.
All right, no problem, Chris. Thanks very much. Great to have you on the podcast again. Now, I usually ask two questions, and for the first one, I just want to ask you essentially what you've been seeing. You've been in Ukraine since around the New Year, I believe, for several weeks, from several weeks before the new invasion, and for the entire 2.5 weeks or so since the invasion began. And my understanding is that I guess you're in Western Ukraine now, but you've mostly been in and around Kyiv in recent weeks. Obviously, a very dangerous place now. There have been absolutely harrowing reports and footage and images from places like Irpin, a quiet suburb, turned into a place of destruction and death. And many other places. Among the dead in that suburb, an American journalist was killed yesterday, and a woman trying to evacuate was killed a week before that, along with her son and daughter and a church volunteer who was with them. And those are really just a few of many civilians who have been killed. Officials in Mariupol, the southern city, say civilian death toll there is over 2,000. So I guess I just want to ask you, Chris, what have you been seeing? What does this war look like from close up?
Yeah, like you said at the top, I've covered the Ukraine since day one, and by that I mean since 2014. And so if I can like zoom out for just a moment, like I mean what we are seeing right now in this new Russian invasion is war on a much larger and more devastating scale. The conflict in 2014 was hot. It was extremely an extremely volatile situation. There, the front line moved on a daily, sometimes even hourly basis. But after about 8, 9 months of nearly all out war, and I say nearly because there just wasn't there weren't airstrikes like we're seeing now. The front lines solidified, and it's been mostly trench warfare for the past several years, and mostly confined to eastern Ukraine. And so, in other parts of the country, the war has felt at times really far away. And now that's just not the case. The war has come to quite literally the doorsteps of every Ukrainian household, and in some cases, like Mariupol or Kharkiv, which is of course Ukraine's second largest city up in the northeast, there's been just devastation on a massive, massive scale. To put it in perspective, like Kharkiv, which I think is a good place to start, is a metropolis of like 1.5 million people. It had this vibrant youth culture and art scene and music scene, and everybody loved going to Kharkiv. It was actually this really beautiful example of some of the like fine Soviet era architecture that had been built up after World War II. And then there were much older historical parts of the city that were stunning. And now much of the city, including the very heart of it, is in ruins. You know, the photos and videos coming out of Kharkiv look a lot like the devastation that we see in Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria, you know, where Russia has also played a role. And, you know, so many of the people that I've spoken with in Kharkiv and nearby cities have been forced to flee. Some of them quite literally, you know, running for their lives from basements to other basements to eventually maybe a train or a car to try to escape and move west. You know, they in the past several years, eastern Ukraine being bombarded by Russian rockets and seeing heavy fighting, people have left from there to seek sanctuary in Kharkiv or in Kyiv. But you know, now these cities are no longer this sort of place of safety and sanctuary. People are having to try to go even further west. And one of the like really heartbreaking things is seeing Kyiv, which has become a second home to me, also turning into, you know, this front line and a city under siege and essentially a ghost town. You know, the last week or so I was in Kyiv and it just felt so strange. And I'm not sure I've really yet fully been able to comprehend everything that's happening around me. You know, like many people, it's been pretty much nonstop here and really difficult to decompress and to you know, really wrap my head around what is happening. But the things that I've seen are horrible. And you mentioned Irpin, and so I'll zoom in on Irpin and some of the smaller towns around Ukraine where, you know, Russian forces have just decimated these places and moved in with such ferocity. Like that, I mean, it's really difficult to explain. I mean, I you know, in a matter of minutes, I lost track of the number of explosions in Irpin when I visited last week. And the people that were fleeing were so terrified. They were physically trembling. And it was just heartbreaking to see, especially older people who had trouble walking or walked with a cane, and younger children just distraught, and hearing their cries as they, you know, try to make their way over a destroyed bridge under shell fire into, you know, crammed buses and cars, literally any vehicle they could get in to try to get away. Yeah, and like I said, this is now pretty much the scene almost everywhere across the country. I just arrived in Lviv yesterday, but you know, driving from town to town westward from Kyiv, I saw, you know, I mean, checkpoints on every road, every intersection, bombed out buildings in cities that I didn't even know had been hit. You know, it's been really heartbreaking. And then you get to Lviv, where I am now, and there's some semblance of normalcy in the city center here, but you know, the signs of war are omnipresent and everywhere you look. And you know, right now in the city center, all of the monuments and church windows are boarded up and wrapped in cellophane sheet metal, and you know, just fearful of, you know, the town is fearful that bombs will start falling even on Lviv, which is thought to be this safe place. And yesterday we saw, you know, a huge missile bombardment at an air base just outside of the city here, about 10 miles from the Polish border, where NATO forces have trained Ukrainian soldiers over the years, and where about 1,000 Western foreigners have been staging and training to join this fight as part of this new international legion. You know, hopefully that gives you some sense of things. I mean, literally, like, war has touched everything here. You know, people live in basements they go to sleep at night not knowing if they're going to wake up. They are awoken in the middle of the night or startled in the middle of the day when they think it's safe because it's daylight by sirens or by explosions. You know, everybody is on edge. I'm not sure anybody in this country of what used to be, you know, nearly 40 million people, but I think now is at least 2 million fewer, because that's there's been a massive exodus of people, refugees, have been living with, you know, on a daily basis. It's absolutely terrifying, and I still can't believe it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, your testimony really speaks for itself, and to me gives a great and obviously extremely troubling picture of the situation. You know, you mentioned just now, you know, hard to believe it's happening, and the idea of you on the ground there trying to, you know, get your head around it, and that's not really possible to do. And I think, you know, for people in Ukraine and outside Ukraine, I think that's just a huge question. Not really a question, but and I've seen people in videos, how, you know, videos of people, a woman in Mariupol, I think, who, you know, one of her children was killed, and she's distraught, doesn't know what to do next, and she's asking why, and so it just brings home the fact that this war is entirely unprovoked. I just can't, yeah. You know, and that's what makes it so so hard to, or that's one of the things that makes it so hard to imagine what's going on. Chris, I just wanted to, I guess I move on to a second question, which is more about how the war seems to be progressing. I think it seems pretty clear now that Putin and those closest to him were expecting a very quick victory, probably expecting Russian forces to take Kyiv and remove the Ukrainian government, or at least force its surrender and subjugation, essentially, within a few days. Now, that obviously didn't happen. There's a lot of talk about, you know, why, you know, many people saying, and military experts saying is, you know, that part of it has been a colossal failure, you know, by the Russian military, or failure of understanding by Putin. And now there's, you know, more talk and more questions about Putin, whether Putin can achieve his goals. At the same time, as many predicted, when it looked like this, apparent initial push to essentially seize the country, seize Kyiv in a few days, was failing. You know, as many predicted, Russia seems to be stepping up its attacks, increasingly targeting civilian areas. And you mentioned yesterday devastating attack on the military facility in western Ukraine, Yavoriv, near the Polish border, which is the hub for training programs and drills with NATO. 35 people, I believe that's still the death toll there. And you know, you were in and around Kyiv, where it seems that advances, you know, obviously haven't gained as much ground, Russian advances, as it seems like Putin would hope. So my question is, again, as a journalist who's been covering the war from close up, do you have an impression now of where it is headed?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right that, you know, if Putin thought he was going to win a quick victory here and encircle Kyiv and see the surrender of the Ukrainian government in Kyiv and President Volodymyr Zelensky, he obviously, you know, he was wrong. Like, he absolutely miscalculated. The Ukrainian armed forces have done a hell of a job beating back the Russians and stopping advances on key cities like Kyiv, and I think really the only major city, if you could call them that, that Russia controls is Kherson, although they have just pulverized Kharkiv. I do think there was a serious miscalculation on Putin's part, and you know, this is dragged on a lot longer than I think Russia was prepared for, and there are a lot of signs pointing to that. You know, one being that I think all of the 150 to 190,000 Russian forces that they had placed around Ukraine have been committed to the war already, and now there is, there are reports that Russia has asked China for some help. I think in providing equipment, if I'm not mistaken. And then, you know, reports of Russia also appealing to allies in the Middle East to commit foreigners to fight here. And, you know, that suggests to me that the battlefield losses are much more significant than Russia had imagined they would be, and that their military equipment losses are also much, much, much higher than they thought they than they thought they would be. And certainly what we've seen anecdotally in videos and photos and of some of the Ukrainian government reports suggests that, you know, the losses in terms of troops are huge, at least several thousand, if not by some counts, you know, the Ukrainian government counts, I mean, maybe more than 10,000. And I think it was Radio Free Europe's local service in Belarus, correct me if I'm wrong, that reported that Belarusian morgues were filling up with Russian bodies. And so, you know, these are all indicators that, you know, there was a big miscalculation and they've really taken a hit. You know, that I think has forced Putin to take a different tack. And that being now this, I mean, nothing short of a campaign of terror. You know, if in the beginning of the war, it was all about hitting strategic targets, trying to decimate Ukraine's air defenses and its military, hitting airfields and army bases, you know, to bend the government to its will and hope for a quick surrender and encirclement of the city. You know, that didn't happen. And I think now what's going on is, you know, bombardments of civilian areas, really trying to sow chaos and terror in order to, see the Ukrainian people just give up. And that hasn't happened. The resilience of the Ukrainian people and the resistance of them, I mean, is just incredibly impressive. And there has been nobody that I've met who, you know, has said, we just want our government to capitulate and give in, like just surrender already, stop this. Like even people fleeing their homes have not said that. And so many people, millions of Ukrainians have taken up arms or are working in some capacity to support the defense of the country and the fight against Russia. And that has been one of the most impressive things that I've seen. Going from here, you know, Putin hasn't got what he wants. And there were negotiations, a fourth round of negotiations between Ukraine and Russia today. And, you know, at least from what I gather from some of the advisors of President Zelensky, it's not going particularly well. They're still a long ways apart on what they want, them being Kyiv and Moscow. And, you know, every indicator suggests that this war is going to grind on. And I know that the military officers that I've spoken with here and some in the central government, including President Zelensky's office, think that there is a possibility that things could still get a lot worse before they get better. And again, that's, you know, everybody thinks that Putin has gone so far that it, you know, he can't just stop now. You know, the Russians really do seem to want a surrender from Kyiv. You know, and I think a lot of the Ukrainians are concerned that you know, Putin hasn't unleashed, you know, all of his fury, military might that he could yet, and may be considering doing that. Which, you know, seeing what I've seen, I can't imagine how awful that would be. It would just be death and destruction on just an incredible, incredible scale.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, obviously a very bleak
One thing I wanted to say real quick is that, you know, where the Russians have miscalculated, and they have, you know, come up against a really tough resistance on the by the Ukrainians. But that said, they still are making advances. Kiev is not encircled, but the Russians have inched closer to the capital. There were attacks much closer to the city center today, just in the Obolon district. You know, and they are still gaining ground in the east, in the north, and in the south. And so while things have not gone their way, they are slowly getting further into the heart of the country, which I think is concerning. And you know, the longer this goes on, it's going to be interesting to see, like, who has the endurance and the reserves to really stick it out. And it might just be that this ends up a war of attrition, and then it's about, you know, who can wear down the other first. You know, so we'll see what happens. I think, you know, there might be some signs in the next week or so, in terms of what route Putin might take. But there's definitely fear that things could get even worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned, you know, the fact that the Russian forces are advancing in several places. There's talk about, you know, the idea that they could kind of cut off, I guess, the Ukrainian military units that are sort of in the southeastern areas. And, you know, you mentioned that the negotiations, the talks, you know, there would, I think, sort of over the weekend and in the past few days, there's some positive kind of signaling coming out of there, but very hard to tell. But you mentioned, you know, Ukrainian officials that you've spoken to, and you know, you saying that, you know, they're still very far apart, and that's also clear from, you know, there's certain things, recognition of Crimea and the Russia-backed areas in the Donbass, you know, those are among the things that I don't think Ukraine is prepared to give up on. So, you know, any signals, of course, it's, you know, you can watch for positive signals from talks, but in the end, it's also a concern that, you know, is Russia using talk to regroup, you know, to buy more time, and I think that's what happened, at least to some degree, you know, with the talks with the West, with NATO and the U.S. in January and February. I'm not saying that the U.S. had illusions about that, but I think that, you know, it appeared there was hope for diplomacy, and then it turned out, you know, essentially that there wasn't, that Putin went ahead and launched this huge attack on Ukraine. So, you know, as you say, but I think there will be signals, you know, in the coming week or so, maybe, of where things are headed. Obviously, from your descriptions of what's happening now and what may happen, there's not a great deal of cause for optimism.
Yeah, unfortunately.
All right, we are running out of time, and we'll wrap it up there. Chris, I really appreciate all your time. Thanks very much for joining me, and stay safe.
Yeah, thanks so much, Steve. All right, take care.
Okay, I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead podcast, and please check out my Week in Russia newsletter on Friday. Thanks for listening.